Good morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 396-0577 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how have you been?
This would be the good time of the year to purchase a pellet stove.
Yes, aren't you supposed to purchase those items off season?
Yeah, and given our temperatures this weekend, here you go, take it for free.
Here it is.
Maybe a new winter coat, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It is definitely heating up there, heating up outside there today, and a little bit what we're going to talk about today, but there are some challenges with this weather, so... Yeah, please, everybody, try to stay cool, keep that sunscreen on, and just try to stay outside, out of the direct heat. Mm-hmm. We don't need any issues. There's going to be issues enough looks like we might peak over that 110 mark. So
stand next to a White House for a few minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, make sure your dog's got lots of water out there.
Yes animals definitely, and not the time of year to be leaving kids or animals in a car. For sure. So yeah, we are here today, and we've got that chiming in there with the great tip about the animals, keeping them safe, Mr. Tom Coyne with Umpqua. Tom, how's everything been going for you?
You know, it's going well. Speaking of water bowls, I've been keeping the water trough full for the cows here lately, and it seems to be evaporating faster than normal lately.
Yes, it will definitely do that. Well, we always like to start off with kind of our crazy real estate houses and celebrity real estate story, but I've noticed a lot. The trend over the last year and a half or 2 years that we've seen a lot of is, I don't know if you've seen any promos or the shows for these, but tiny houses. Have you seen these miniature houses?
My wife and I are absolutely hooked on them.
Okay, I knew.
Tiny House Nation,
I knew, McKay, that you would love this. I mean, they do some incredible things on these small homes, and they... A lot of them are on trailer frames that they can move around and set. And, you know, it's pretty cool to watch that sometimes. But I thought I would, in honor of that, bring a couple examples of... I came across an article, Zillow.com had posted, Living Large in Small Spaces. And they had 10 homes for sale under 500 square feet. And that's kind of packing it in. I mean, we see some prefabs out in Richland, some of the older homes that run in that 698 square feet range, and then a lot of the models are 810 square feet. But under 500 square feet, I don't know if you've ever been to Lahaina in Hawaii, but we do have listed a condo in Lahaina coming in at 454 square feet. And that is priced in Hawaii. You're going to pay up for that $365,000.
That is incredible.
500 square feet. Number two that I picked out here, we have in Boston, Massachusetts, 12 Melrose Street. We have a 415 square feet, one bedroom, one bath. And that is coming in at $379,000.
Well, I wouldn't even expect to have a bedroom in there. So
I know they did. They got two rooms there. Now I don't think you're getting a king size bed in that bedroom, but it is maybe a postage stamp. Very, very interesting. Now this one, you're getting a little more than the house here, but in Crawford, Colorado. Kind of in between Aspen and Telluride, there is a 468 square feet cabin that sits on 40 acres that has a view of the mountains and valleys. And that is coming in at $329,000.
Well, it's got 40 acres.
Now,
might be a little hunting cabin. Or?
Now, I didn't tell you this does not come with a bathroom though.
So they outhouse
on this one, but you got the 40 acres. So there's some value. A home in Washington made the list. So Shoreline Drive, Camino Island, over there. This is square footage on this one is a little beach cottage coming in at 336 square feet. Now, mind you, so this is right on the water, and they did a huge deck. We talked a lot about outdoor living spaces. So, I mean, granted, 363 square feet, it's just kind of like one room, but the whole backside of the house has the folding accordion doors that open up. And so you truly then spill out onto that deck for a lot of kind of that vacation type retreat. Now, that being right on the water in Camino Island is going to cost you $425,000. So I think we're over, you know, we're getting pretty high up on dollars per square foot on some of those. So. So the tiny house trend continuing there. It was just kind of interesting to go through and look at those prices. And in environments like, you know, a lot of these examples are urban, very tight quarters in the cities. You've got beach property. You've got Hawaii. So you see a lot of those smaller square footages come into play when you have scarcity for land or whatever you're looking at. I mean,
you know, Lance, we stayed at a yurt one time as on a little vacation we took, and I think it was probably 16 by 16.
Okay.
And it worked for the two nights we were there, and it was fun. But I don't know about living there full time.
Yeah, I think we get a little spoiled over here on the east side with our abundance of land and property. But there, it is fun to, like you said, sometimes it's fun to book some of these smaller places on these vacations and see how it is. And from the sounds of it, who knows? We might see John McKay in a tiny house pretty soon, kicking around and moving around to some different spots. So once the kids are gone, I think it is a lot easier. So on to our local subject today, and this kind of relates to local real estate news, but we've kind of rolled this into our subject for today because I'm starting to see a lot of the negative effects from this on the real estate side of things. And that is, it's important to note because a lot of people still haven't quite gotten the whole word out. And that is a lot of local Tri-City lawns and properties are watered through the KID, through the Kennewick Irrigation District. Now, because of what's happened with our drought and our drought status that has been issued for our state, KID has had to go into a mandatory drought watering schedule. And so the ability of what actually does this is actually a Kennewick Irrigation Resolution 2015-10. And this kind of lays out the matter of their drought operations and their expectations, along with the consequences for not following that schedule. So, you know, we think this, you know, a lot of times we think about these issues and we think of it as a California problem or a, you know, Arizona type, Nevada type problem. But this year especially, we're really seeing the effects of that. And now that's come full circle, very local into our market. So one of the things that happens is based upon the last digit of your address, your watering times are laid out on a schedule, and you can find this at KID.org, and they have the actual drought watering schedule. But for instance, if the last digit of your address had a 1 in it, then your watering times would be Tuesday a.m. and Saturday a.m. Or as McKay is holding up his hand to me here, which you can't see on the radio, but in the studio, a 5. McKay, that means you're watering Sunday a.m.
And
Thursday a.m. It's very good. He knows his schedule. Now, if your lawn is not used to these watering times and you're not properly set up with your timers, this can cause a lot of issues for the appearance of what's going on out there. And we talk all the time on the show about how important curb appeal is. And so now what we're seeing is we're seeing folks that are trying to sell their home or buyers who are trying to purchase it. And if you let this go too long, especially very timely this weekend when we're looking at temperatures from 105 to 111, you know, and for the next week coming up, very high temperatures, it's very, very difficult to maintain that lush-looking yard that's really going to entice people to make a higher offer with curb appeal during this situation. Now, it's also important to note that there are some consequences that come along with that KID watering schedule. So enforcement of that schedule is the first and second offense of watering on any other day than assigned is a warning issued to the property owner. Now, the third offense is a charge of a $100 penalty, and then your valve gets locked out for 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at this point, if there was a fourth offense, then you will be charged another $100 penalty, and your valve is locked out for the remainder of the season. So
you can only imagine what your grass would look like at the end of that time.
Absolutely. So this is not something that we, you know, really want the homeowners, especially if you're planning on selling in the near future, go, you know, really messing around with. Now, they do allow for supplemental watering of specific burnt spots when necessary. And then, for instance, sometimes, you know, when we look, a lot of people have said, well, I can just supplement with city water. Well, you can't do that too much. In fact, in the city of Richland, they have an ordinance that actually prevents you from using your city water for the lawn water as a protection mechanism going forward. Now, we haven't seen a lot or heard a lot of enforcement about that, but if it's readily abused, those things are in place and we're going to see that happening. But an occasional supplemental to water those burn spots are some of the things that you can do. So if you don't have an extra hose with a sprinkler to do that, you're going to need to be prepared to do that. I also went through and talked to a couple of landscapers that we have that are friends and take care of this type of situation and came across and put together a couple tips that you need to be aware of. Number one out there is you're going to have to minimize some of your fertilization this year. In these drought conditions, a heavily fertilized lawn will use way more water and then be more susceptible to drought stress. So that's one of the things where you might have to cut back that schedule a little bit. Another one of the most important things that you can do is, I know a lot of people, and myself included, love to have the short putting green type grass. Well, this might be an occasion where to make it through these longer periods of water, you're going to need to have longer grass. And so you're going to have to raise the height of your cutting blades so that you have longer grass. That's going to encourage a deeper root growth so that we can use those deep waterings twice a week to help maintain the grass and keep it alive. I know it's really difficult, and these times require people to make these adjustments. And if your timer is not adjusted properly, and you might even have to buy a different timer that allows for that, it is really something that you're going to have to work on to keep up with. So it's just one of those things where you're actually watering less days, but I think it takes more effort to keep up with it. However, a lot of times buyers don't know about these type of things. When we have a buyer coming into town and they look at three or four houses and two of them have massively burnt up lawns and the other two look fantastic, regardless of what they know or don't know, that buyer's going to lean towards what they feel or perceive to be the better maintained house. So this is something that really is affecting buyers. Also, recently, too, we've had times where a buyer saw a yard or a lawn prior to us going into these drought schedules. Maybe they even made an offer and they've been under contract on a house, and now they're doing a 60-day close. They're going back 30 to 40 days later, and they're coming back and saying, hey, wait a minute. Seller has to maintain the yard the way I saw it. This looks nothing like what I saw the yard. So we have this whole additional layer of things that did not exist before thrown on top of the maintenance issue. And so it's really, really something that you have to get together with your landscape professional, make sure that you're optimized and set up to have the best possible looking yard that you can have, given these conditions. We don't want people violating these conditions of these drought orders and then facing potential penalties or lockouts. So it's a huge, huge deal with us in the real estate community right now. We're trying to stay on top of it, keep our customers educated about that, let our buyers that may be moving, you know, first-time homeowners, that type of stuff, moving from a situation where they didn't have this to where they now have to comply. So there's a whole nother education piece that we're putting together with this to keep properties looking good and make sure the homeowners are informed about it. So throwing a monkey wrench with these high temperatures and these drought conditions, but it's just one of those things where we're making those adjustments and getting through. When we come back from the break, I've got four more tips on how you can keep the yard looking good during these drought conditions. We're also going to talk with Tom about the money side of things, and I'm really hoping we don't have a drought with money. When we come back.
We don't have that problem, Lance.
Good, good, good. When we come back.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been talking about, well, the weather a little bit in relation to these drought conditions that we have, the higher temperatures, and how that affects real estate curb appeal following the required schedules that you have to follow with your irrigation water provider. And just going through a couple examples of what you can do to help maintain value in a sales environment. We always like to, every week though, a big portion of that is what's going on in the lending world. How are these buyers getting their money and what we can do to help out with that. So Mr. Tom Coyne at Umpqua. Tom, how's things in your world?
You know, we're talking a lot about the challenges with the water and the drought, and I don't have a whole lot of way I can relate this to that other than the challenge that we work with on bank statements when financing loans.
I appreciate you trying to draw a connection there, but yes, I kind of, I didn't give you a whole lot to work with our water topic today. You don't get into that with the lending side very often.
You know, I don't, but we do have challenges that we have, like I said, with bank statements. And if you're getting ready to sell or buy your next house and you're going to be needing financing, it's important to know these things up front, and it's just going to help your loan process go so much smoother. So when we're going to get your loan started, we'll get your last 2 months bank statements, and what we're looking for on there are overdrafts or out of the ordinary deposits. You know, we don't care where you're shopping at or how many times you go out to fast food or anything like that, but if you're having overdrafts, it might be an indication that you have a hard time following a budget, and that might give a lender concerns on, are you going to be able to make this payment? Now, for deposits, we're looking, like I said, for anything out of the ordinary, anything non-payroll deposits. Now, we're not too worried about a small deposit. Maybe that's less than 20% of your monthly income, but we're talking more about the large deposits. If we see, say, a $10,000 cash deposit in the month before you want to buy a house, we're going to have to ask, where did this money come from? And if you don't have a way to source those funds, then we don't use it in qualifying. We pretend like it's not even there. So we're going to require the documentation along with the letter of explanation of what it's from. The main thing we're looking for is, was this a loan of some sort? Does it have to be repaid? Do you have any more debts as a result of this deposit going in? And now our debt to income is higher than what we were thinking. So that's the main concern with large deposits out there. Now, we're going to get 2 months of bank statements. Anything that happened 3 months ago is considered seasoned. So that's why this is an important topic now. If you're planning to buy, say, in the fall, is that when you come to me, I'm going to get 2 months bank statements. So if you had that large deposit 3-4 months ago, it's not going to be a concern for us because now those funds are considered seasoned. Next I want to talk about is, where can money for a down payment come from? Of course, there's the good old-fashioned way. Checking, savings, stocks, mutual funds. You just save up the money, buy the house, and there's your down payment. Another account that a lot of people will draw from that I think is completely acceptable if your employer allows it or the servicer of your 401k and retirement accounts is a 401k. Now, I look at a house as part of your overall retirement portfolio, if you will. So I truly think that everyone's goal should be to have a house paid off by the time they retire. So if you're able to, say, pull $10,000 out of your retirement account, so you can put 5% down on your loan, and that gives you into more favorable financing, and now you're going to be able to pay that house off quicker, then I'm all for it. And you'll want to check with your retirement servicer and see what they allow. Some of them will allow a loan in which you pay interest back to yourself. Some will allow you to pull tax-free funds out for the purpose of purchasing a home. But there are some out there that don't allow you to pull them out unless you no longer work for that employer. So you'll want to check for your individual account to see what is allowed. Down payment could also come from secured sources. So a secured source means that this loan or the loan that the money came from is tied to some sort of property. And that could be real estate. It could be a vehicle, a boat, or an RV. Let's say you have a car paid off. I think it's a pretty good way to come up with some money for a down payment because auto loan interest rates are so low. So if you can cruise down and get an auto loan at 3%, so that way you can come up with your 5% down payment or however much you're looking to put down, and that saves you 0.5% on your mortgage, then fantastic, because it's going to get you into a better program than you otherwise would be able to get if maybe you put less money down. And then lastly is gifts from family members. Now, we have to source all gifts, but every one of our loan programs, including conventional loans, allows for gifts from family members. So great way to help get you into a house. There's a lot of different scenarios that come into play. And what I always tell people is maybe before you start moving money around, call me, let's chat about your scenario, and that will make it so much easier on you, because sourcing funds can become a headache when we're processing a loan.
Tom, that's really, really good information. Another thing that we've come across the last couple of days is notating the source of those funds. A lot of people don't realize, and buyers out there, they don't buy homes every day, so it's not exactly their fault, but they're working with agents, and maybe it's not explained to them properly. But when you are submitting an offer for a purchase and sale agreement, you are stating in that offer, our standard language in our purchase and sale agreement state that you have funds available and are not relying on a contingent source of funds. So a lot of times we'll have people, they attach a financing addendum, which says, otherwise stated, I'm getting a loan for a portion of this. But what that doesn't cover is if they're putting 5% down or 10% down, they're stating that they have those funds available and ready to go. And many times they are getting a gift or they are using one of these programs. No problem if they are. They just need to notate that with their agent in the offer, because if they don't, then that could be considered a breach of contract that they did not properly disclose where those funds were coming from. So I love that you laid out all the places where they can come from. The buyers and their agents just needed to make sure they notate that on offers for the purchase and sale agreement.
Let me guess, you just ran into this recently,
A couple times in the last week, where we've kind of made it a standard practice that we counter with that information a lot of times just to verify. There's a great form, an addendum called Evidence of Funds that us as agents have available to us, and we a lot of times end up using that in a counteroffer situation to make sure the buyers know that they're going to have to not only prove that to the lender, but also to the seller to make sure we have the funds available.
Well, if you're from a seller's perspective, you got one offer, both all parts equal as far as sales price. One of them is getting a gift, money from 401k, and then the rest is saved up. And the other guy just has money in his bank account right now. Which do you feel more comfortable with?
Absolutely. It can become a decision that makes a big, big difference to the seller. So good information, Tom. Thank you, too. We have had a record number of closings this month. Many, many of them have been from Umpqua. So I definitely want to thank you. I believe June will be one of our highest closing months ever on the Kenmore team. So an amazing market, lots of activity coming through there. And we appreciate all of the help that you and your team has given us, for sure.
Absolutely.
So we have a few more tips. We've talked about maintaining good curb appeal in these drought conditions. And there's a couple things that if you have not done them, you might want to do. Before the break, we talked about raising the height that you're mowing the lawn. You can still keep it nice and trim, but we might have to give a couple more inches on that grass so that they develop a deeper root system to make it through these drought conditions. Number two that we've got is, if you did not aerate your lawn in the spring, this was probably not the year to skip that. If you're having trouble, because what we're doing is a lot of people now are, instead of watering less, more frequently, they've got the 2 days a week, so they're trying to get that water table to drive down deeper moisture. If your lawn has not been aerated in a couple of years, it's going to be harder for that water to penetrate. So you might want to consider having the lawn aerated to help get that water down there. Here's another one that this statistic I just could not believe. It shocked me a little bit. But you want to sharpen your mower blades at least twice this summer. I know a lot of us, me included, will do that one time, you know, at the beginning of the year. You take it in for the, I always take it in for the winter service when I'm not using the lawnmower, have them work on it, sharpen the blades. But you want to potentially get them sharpened twice this summer, because dull blades, as you go further into the season, they tend to tear at the grass. And it notated that grass, it takes 40 to 60% more water because the grass is trying to recover from the stress of the torn blades versus a clean cut. So that grass is going to use more water. I couldn't believe that. 50%, you know, 40 to 60% more water when you're using dull mower blades. So that was definitely one that I'm going to change what we're doing to take care of that. The other thing, too, to note is to definitely be checking your sprinkler heads. Are you spraying, you know, sidewalks and driveways? The driveways don't need that much watering.
They don't.
No, they don't. So if you're getting some overspray there, definitely make those adjustments to the sprinklers so that you're utilizing the best amount of water you can on the actual lawn. Next thing that I had written down that just kind of goes along with our weather is, this is the time of year that you can tackle some of those outdoor painting projects. We talk a lot about curb appeal and getting stuff done. Well, I tell you what, the paint, it dries quicker. There's more daylight hours that they can get those projects done. And that paint, as we've seen from numerous remodel studies, that paint is sometimes the cheapest and best investment that you can make to increase your curb appeal. So this is real life situations that we're running into this time of year. We're seeing a lot of this come up in our transactions. So I just wanted to kind of cut some of that off at the pass. We want to make sure that you're getting the maximum amount that you can when you go to sell, and that buyers, when you go to buy, you're informed about what you're getting in these irrigation districts, which district you're in, what the water situation looks like. Definitely something to research. So that is what is happening in Tri-Cities real estate right now. It is extremely, extremely hot out there. Please, everybody, be safe this weekend. Stay in the shade. Have plenty, if you are going out to look at houses, have plenty of bottled water with you when you do that. We're still going to be out there selling and getting people through properties. If you have any questions at all, go to KenmoreTeam.com, and we will be right there to help you get started and find your property.
And we'll be back next week right here on News Talk 870.